Yisrael, providing educational guidance to schools around the world, with a special eye, obviously, on Eretz Yisrael. He'll tell you a little bit more about Atid and what they do. But he's here today not really to talk about that particular angle, but to talk about careers in Avodas HaKodesh in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Sachs has a pretty wide view of what it means to work in Avodas HaKodesh in Eretz Yisrael. I know that for a lot of you, we think of setting up a career in teaching in Eretz Yisrael. It basically means teaching in a Shana Baretz program. Rabbi Sachs will talk a little bit about that, but I don't think you need to bring in someone from Eretz Yisrael to talk about teaching in Reishit or Torah Shraga. The question is, what else is there out there? What is the educational world out like there? What impact can you have as an American on Israeli society? So it's really our great pleasure to have you. Whenever you come in, it's our great pleasure to have you.
It's always a pleasure.
And I encourage you to follow up with him as well on the kinds of things he's talking about. His office is in Yerushalayim. He's always happy to take people in. And that's his email. So thanks, Rabbi Sachs.
Thank you, Rabbi Penner.
I got to go to class. Give me a second.
Hi. Thank you for committing yourself to the Jewish people and the State of Israel. By a meter of like low, middle, or high, how set are you at this point? I imagine that you're in different years in smicha, so the point of having to make a decision of what's happening is either coming up in a few months or in a couple of years. But by some kind of madad, how committed are you to getting on the plane and joining us? Are you like if somebody offers you $1 million and a house, you're happy to do it, and you're coming, whether you're living on the street or not?
I'm going to care.
It's like living on the street. Okay, and I'm correct that you represent the different years of smicha. Yes. Okay. I always say about myself that it is a remarkable and unlikely schut that I ended up living in Eretz Yisrael and teaching Torah in Eretz Yisrael. And for those of you that will be able to join me, Ashreinu, Matov Chalkeinu, and it's a wonderful, wonderful life. If there's one short message, if you have to leave now, the short answer is yes, it can be done. You can make it. Asterisk. And everything that will come after is the asterisk. Like Rabbi Penner said, I'm the head of this institution in Yerushalayim called Atid, together with Rabbi Chaim Bravender. We do teacher training and we work with schools and we produce materials for education, both there and here and elsewhere in the world. We also, on the side of that, have a program called webyeshiva.org, which you may have heard. Who's heard of Web Yeshiva? It's shameful. You should all visit the website, webyeshiva.org. It's a fully interactive online yeshiva using video conferencing. We have 6,000 registered students from all over the world participating in synchronous live shiurim around the clock from around the world. That's what I do. I studied here in the yeshiva, in college, and in smicha, and in revel, and I taught in Central for a couple of years, and I came on Aliyah, I went on Aliyah in 1994. I've been there ever since. I would say that if you want to start thinking about a career, not just in education, but in Jewish work, broadly defined, there are three things that you should start to do. Diversify, specialize, and initiate. By diversify, I mean diversify your expectations. As Rabbi Penner said, where did you learn in Israel? Netiv Aryeh. If somebody would ask you to be a Ram in Netiv Aryeh, is that a job you think you'd be liable to accept?
No.
Where did you?
I was in the mirror.
In the mirror. They offered you, how's your Yiddish?
I learned some Yiddish.
Can you give a shiur in Yiddish? The point being is that we all go to yeshiva in Israel, wherever it is, Tivarie, the Mir, the Gush, Shalvim, Eretz Yisrael, lo mishaneh. We have a good experience. It must have been a good experience because you all continued in the learning track, in the Torah track. And that idea of, I could see myself doing that, well, that's how most people actually think of going into education. That's how most people think of going into the rabbinate. You know, you're a kid, you're sitting there in shul, and you have an inspiring rabbi who has a good impact on you. You get up, you go to school, you go to yeshiva, you have a rebbe who, and you conceive of yourself doing it. So you tend to think that you'll go in the ba'oto maslul. If you learned here, you'd like to be around there. You have to diversify your expectations, because obviously there are only so many ramim positions in any given yeshiva. And your conception of what you might do shouldn't be limited by your own experiences. I don't mean that if you taught in Nativ, if you learned in Nativ Arye, it would be this huge sacrifice if you went and became a Ram in Eretz Tzvi. Because at the end of the day, Nativ Arye and Eretz Tzvi, they're more similar than they are different. But you might need to diversify your conception of what does it mean to work in Chinuch in Eretz Yisrael outside of the Shana Ba'aretz. Specialize means that the more tools you have in your toolbox, the more commodities that you bring to the table beyond your ability to give a Gemara shir or give a Chumash shir, make you a much more valuable product in terms of the job hunt. And that might be more relevant to people that are still at a stage where you're trying to figure out what other professional training you're doing. But whatever you can do, so for example, now in Israel, you know, Israel's, the Jewish world is just like the general world, but only 10 years behind. So for example, a number of years ago, we all woke up to the needs of special education and ADD and learning disabilities and all of those kinds of things, about 10 years after the world of general education. So Israel is always 10 years behind America on these things. So if somebody is, if somebody has that kind of specialization, that they can work in special ed, that they can work in counseling, that they can work in administration, something beyond, you know, a conventional classroom teacher. So whatever you have that diversifies your portfolio, that of course makes you a more valuable commodity. And the third thing I would say is initiate. Like I mentioned, I have the privilege of working with Rabbi Chaim Bravender, who's one of the pioneers of education in Israel. He, after having learned here, went on Aliyah in 1965, I think. And he always says that Israel still today, this was certainly true in the 60s, but even today, it's still the Wild West. You know that famous story about Dizengoff, the founding mayor of Tel Aviv. Somebody asked him, at the end of his career, how do you become a mayor of a big city in Israel? So he says, well, first you go and build a city. And then they elect you mayor. That's also true in terms of our work. The country is full of all types of initiatives. And some of them succeed, and some of them fail. Perhaps you heard of a particular Shana Ba'aretz yeshiva that just now closed, went bankrupt mid-year. A very sad story. But generally, institutions don't go bankrupt. And if you can initiate, if you can create your own program, you know, I think of everything from small little yeshivot to another colleague of ours came from the yeshiva, Josh Fass. I was on a plane with him a number of years ago, and he said he's thinking of making Aliyah. And I said, oh, what are you going to do? So I figured he's going to tell me he wants to come and be a Rebbe, wherever. He says, I'm going to create an institution. You know, we're going to encourage Aliyah. So I said to myself, it sounds nice. And of course, now today it's Nefesh B'Nefesh, right? A pretty important organization. So not everybody is built for that. And it, of course, generally involves an ability to fundraise. And it's not necessarily going to be the thing that you're going to do before you get to Israel. I started my own organization, but only after I had done a couple of other things. But the ability to think that I'm going to create something, and it doesn't have to be an other rabbi. It shouldn't be, you know, another Shana Ba'aretz place. There are periods of boom and bust. Apparently right now we're in a period of bust on the Shana Ba'aretz scene. New institutions come, old institutions fold or get folded into something else. But to think of things that can contribute to life and learning and culture in Eretz Yisrael, and to find a way to do that, there's a lot of precedent for that. The more practical question, the more practical question of what can you do now to prepare yourself for Aliyah or prepare yourself for a career once you get to Israel in a year from now or 5 years from now or 10 years from now. So just a few thoughts, things that I've learned along the way. The question of, is it better just to come or is it better to work here for a couple of years? It depends on what you're doing here. Experience doesn't necessarily help in landing a job. But experience is, of course, still a good thing. And there's certain professional experiences that you can get here that will not be available to you in Israel. So if you have an eye towards the pulpit, which is a field that's beginning to change a little bit in Israel, the experience of working as an assistant rabbi here in a shul where being assistant rabbi means you're really going to learn a lot. Not all assistant rabbis are created the same. There are certain experiences that people have working in a shul with a senior rabbi who really serves as a madrich and is really helping you learn from your experience, because experiences happen all the time. We don't always necessarily go to the trouble of learning from them, or we learn from them and we end up learning the wrong thing. But if you're in a place where the rabbi is really working with the assistant, to where it's really an internship and you have responsibilities, you're not just a what do they call that before an assistant rabbi?
Intern.
A rabbinic intern. Rabbinic intern, right? So as a rabbinic intern is usually just, you know, I don't know, a way for the shul to have somebody hanging around. I'm sure some of you now are going to get news. But an assistant rabbi should be a real internship in the sense of medical training, where you're given responsibilities and it's done with the accompaniment of a senior person, and there's an opportunity to try to dissect what you're doing and to learn from it. If you have that opportunity here, that's something that you're not going to be able to get in Israel, because it doesn't exist, because we bekoshi have regular rabbis, and we certainly don't have assistant rabbis. Even teaching, there's certain high schools here where you can be a teacher, and in the first 2-3 years you're going to learn a tremendous amount about teaching and about pedagogy and about chinuch and the array of issues, and those things will be useful to you throughout your life and throughout your career. It will make you a richer person, not financially, it'll make you a better teacher, it will make you a more successful teacher. May or may not help you land the job when you get off the plane, but those would be valuable. But again, not all schools are created equal, and there are schools where a teacher is hired and they're thrown to the wolves and they sink or they swim. I just mixed the metaphor. There usually aren't too many wolves in the pool. So it depends on what kind of experience you're having here. That being said, if you have an opportunity, if you're committed to coming on Aliyah, and you have an opportunity that's going to bring you, take it. Even if you're pretty sure that professional opportunity, which may be enough to get you there and to, you know, keep your head above water initially, is not going to end up being your career. I know very, very, very few. I actually know 3 people in Avodas HaKodesh. This is also true in other professions as well. But I only know 3 people in Avodas HaKodesh. And I know a lot of people in Eretz Yisrael working in the Jewish fields. I only know 3 people that came on Aliyah with a job in hand, and after 5 years ended up staying with that and made a career of it. One of those 3 people is Rabbi Riskin. Another is Rabbi Lichtenstein, and a 3rd is just the guy that got lucky. So unless you happen to have the talent, intelligence, or luck of those people, you don't have to wait for the call for the career-making job. If you have an opportunity to come, come. Because it's very difficult to get a job by remote control. It's a crowded field in whatever it is that you'll be doing in Jewish work. Certainly in the Yerushalayim area, if you're prepared to go up north or down south, there might be more opportunities, but most Anglo-Saxons want to live in a certain geographical area. If you have an opportunity to come in that crowded area, take it. And you'll land, and you'll learn, and you'll adjust, and you'll make connections, and you'll learn the lay of the land, and then you'll make other career moves. And you might have a string of two or three or four or five jobs until you find your niche or end up creating your own institution. A lot of it has to do with connections and with timing. Additionally, the best thing that you can do now to prepare for a career in Eretz Yisrael is to perfect your Ivrit. If you think your Ivrit is okay, it's probably eh, and if you think your Hebrew is eh, it's probably poor. If you think your Hebrew is poor, you're in a lot of trouble. And whatever you can do to improve your Hebrew now will be useful. Now, you're saying to yourself, I'm going to be teaching in the Nativ Aryeh anyway, so I don't need Hebrew. Well, maybe you will, maybe you won't, but if you don't have Ivrit, you're really limiting your possibilities to a very small sector of career options. Think about it. There are a lot of Jews in Israel, and everybody is receiving some form of chinuch. There are a lot of religious Jews in Israel, and all of them are receiving a form of religious education. There are a lot of professional opportunities. You're limiting yourself, if you're limiting yourself to the Shana Ba'aretz English-speaking programs, you're really cutting yourself down to a very, very, very small niche. And if you want to come to Eretz Yisrael and you want to contribute to the Jewish people, being able to do so in Hebrew, maybe not in the first year, maybe not in the second year, but if you want to have those opportunities open to you, there are all types of ways to improve your Hebrew. There are all types of ways to improve your Hebrew now. I assume that most of them are known to you. If not, you can email me, and I'm happy to help you figure it out. And I'm telling you this because I learned it the hard way. Because when I got off the plane, I could not speak Hebrew properly, and it took a while, and now I can. I was speaking to someone earlier, and I said, "How's your Hebrew?" He said, "Oh, my Hebrew's great." And I said, "Okay, let's say I invited you to come to my shul in Efrat. You know, in Efrat, people do speak English. And I asked you to give a five-minute Dvar Torah in English. And you prepared a Dvar Torah, because when you speak, you have to prepare no matter what language you're speaking in. So the content is already in your pocket. But 3 seconds before you get up there, I say to him, "Oh, you know that you're speaking in Hebrew, right? Well, are you going to be able to make it happen or not? If you can't, so then that should be an indicator, that should be your litmus test that your Hebrew still needs some work." There are other things that are important on a technical side. I'm sure you're aware that a couple of years ago there was this whole big debate in Israel in terms of the accreditation of YU degrees and diplomas. Yes, you know what I'm talking about? No? There was a question about YU degrees being recognized in Israel. If you are teaching in Nativ Aryeh or what have you, so it doesn't really matter. If you want to do anything that's connected to the Misrad HaChinuch pay scale, which means teaching in the Misrad HaChinuch, in the Department of Education, teaching in a yeshiva high school, so you need to have a degree. Your salary is linked to your degree, which means that your BA is recognized as a BA, your MA is recognized as an MA, smicha is recognized as smicha. But in addition, your salary, the salary table, and there's certain Shana Ba'aretz institutions where your salary is linked voluntarily. They're not obligated to do this, but your salary is linked to the table of the Misrad HaChinuch, the pay scale of the Misrad HaChinuch. It's made up of three factors. One is your degree. You have a BA, you have an MA, you have smicha. Generally speaking, MA and smicha is considered between an MA and a PhD. It's called kefil Torah. That's a smicha is considered like an MA equivalent, but if you have both of them, it gives you a notch up. So your degree, your vetek, how long you've been teaching. Are you year one, year two, year three? And that's the way the table is constructed. And how much you're teaching, how many hours you're teaching. And it's a simple table that figures out that question of your vetek, of what, how much experience you have. Lots of different things count towards experience. If you worked here, that can count towards your experience there. So when you're making aliyah, when you're packing your bags, you should get letters on the letterhead of the school you taught in, of the shul you taught in, saying, if it can be in Hebrew, that's even better, saying that so-and-so taught in our school X number of hours. If you taught 1 hour a day, that's not going to help. Anything that's at least, let's say, 8 or 10 periods a week teaching, or the equivalent work in, if you were, even if you like worked in camp, I don't mean as a counselor, but if you were like a division head in a camp, and it had like responsibilities during the winter, and you worked, so there's precedent even for that to be recognized, to give you a certain number of points, bump up. So everything that you do here, you should bring documentation of, it, as long as it was something that like lasted for a whole academic year. Even if you were a youth worker, if you were like a youth director and it involved some like teaching, there's precedent even for that being recognized as credit for your pay scale. In terms of if somebody wants to work in the Israeli school system, which is something that you should consider. It's not something that the average American thinks about. There are a lot of people that end up doing it and not only succeeding but enjoying. My wife, for example, after many years teaching in the 1 year programs, now teaches Tanakh in an Israeli girls' high school. And there are many advantages professionally speaking as well. Obviously, teaching high school is different than teaching post-high school. Although many of the post-high school programs are nothing more than grade 13. That being said, to teach in the Israeli school system, you really need what's called a Tudat Hora'ah, a teacher's certificate. There is some debate on this topic. I spoke to Dean Schnall about this yesterday. Is anybody an Azrieli? Right. Whether or not an MA from Azrieli is recognized ipso facto as a Tudat Hora'ah. He claims that it is. If and when you're coming on Aliyah, you should go speak to him beforehand to get all the paperwork. But if it is recognized as a Tudat Hora'ah, then that really opens other options for you. You can get a job teaching in the Israeli school system without a Tudat Hora'ah, but generally speaking, it's through the back door. If you have an MA, you can get a job teaching in high school without a Tudat Hora'ah, but it's not worth your while in the long run. Because the only way to get kviut, the only way to get tenure, which is a very good deal to have tenure, not only doesn't it mean that you can't get fired, it means that if you move, the Misrad HaChinuch has to give you a job in proximity to wherever you live. The only way to get kviut is if you have a Tudat Hora'ah. So even if you have an MA and you can get a job teaching, you'll never get tenure. And you're also not part of what's called the Gmul Hishtalmut system, which is a very smart system, and I wish they would adopt it here. In Israel, in order to encourage ongoing professional development, there's something called Hishtalmiyot. Hishtalmiyot are like continuing education credits. And everything that you do has a certain number of, if it's recognized for Gmul Hishtalmut, there's certain things that are done in school, like whatever workshops are done over the course of the year in school count towards your Gmul Hishtalmut. And then anything that you opt to do on your own, like for example, the Yimei Iyun in Tanakh at the Gush, right, which is a program I assume that's familiar to you. Thousands of people come, many people are coming just L'Shem Shemayim, L'Shem Talmud Torah, Torah L'Shmo. But at the bottom of the poster, it's always going to say, Mukar le'ix sha'ot Gmul Hishtalmut. That if you participate in the Yimei Iyun in Tanakh, you're going to get a certificate or a stamp that says that you completed 10 hours, 12 hours, whatever it is, and that also goes into your bank, and every certain number of hours, when you collect up a certain number of points of Hishtalmut, that bumps you up a salary. point. Right? So it's a very, very good incentive to for continuing education, and there's some really wonderful continuing education. A lot of continuing education is nonsense, but there's some very wonderful continuing education opportunities in Israel, and it beyond the Lashem Shamayim, it helps your salary. If you don't have a Tudat Hora'ah, even if you're teaching in a elementary school or a high school, you can't be part of that system. So if you don't have an MA from Azrieli and you're open to teaching in the Israeli school system, you can get a job, but you should also get a Tudat Hora'ah. Now, how do you get a Tudat Hora'ah, a teacher certificate? It depends. There are all these different institutions, I'm sure you're familiar with them. At Yeshivat Har Tzion, for example, there's Mechlelet Herzog. In Yerushalayim, there's Mechlelet Lifshitz. There are all different types of these colleges where you can go to do a Tudat Hora'ah. It usually takes a day a week over 2 years to do. It's not very hard. It is not the rigor of an MA. You don't have to write a thesis. You don't have to take comprehensive exams. There are two components to the Tudat Hora'ah program. One is courses in education, in pedagogy, and the other is courses in whatever discipline you're getting your Tudat Hora'ah in Tanakh, in Talmud, in Ivrit, in history, in what have you. And here's the bizarre part of it. You don't need to have a Tudat Hora'ah in what you're teaching. If you have a Tudat Hora'ah in math, and you're a Gemara teacher, you have a Tudat Hora'ah, that's enough. You don't need to have it in the discipline in which you're teaching, although obviously most people would want a degree in what they're doing. If you have an MA in Jewish history, and you get to Israel and you need a Tudat Hora'ah, you only need to take the pedagogy classes. Meaning they count the MA in history as the equivalent of the content portion, and then you have to take 10, I think it's 10 courses in education and pedagogy. That's the way that works. If you come as an Olé, among the things in the basket of rights for Olim is tuition reduction for higher education. So getting the Tudat Hora'ah, if you do it in the initial, I think, 2 years that you're there, would cost very little. Even if you pay full tuition, it's not a huge, it's not bashamayim. I think it's probably around 10,000 shekel. Shekel's now about 3.5, so somebody do the math. It's not a huge amount of money to get this degree. But if you do it as an ole, as part of your rights, then it's even further subsidized. The question of how much money do you need to live on? When I went on Aliyah, I was offered a job. It was one of those cases that I described as being in the right place at the right time. I happened to be in Israel for winter break. This is when I was teaching in Central. I just walked in at the moment that somebody else was either fired or got quit, or fired or quit, and you know, somebody said to me, "Would you be interested in this job? Now, would you be willing to come on Aliyah this summer for it?" And it worked out. That being said, I would say that the very best thing that you can do, if possible, if you're interested in making Aliyah, before making Aliyah, is to spend as much time as possible in Israel. During the summer, during winter break, I was the founding director of the NCSY Summer Kollel. I used to spend 3 months in Israel. There were years that I left this room over here. They still give finals over there? Yes? So there were years that I took my last final in college and went with my suitcase from the final to the airport at the end of May, and I would come back the day before college started in September. And I would spend the whole summer in Israel, which is a wonderful opportunity. But it's also a good way to keep up your connections and to make connections. When I happened to walk into that office that day and somebody said, "Do you want this job?" It's not that they'd never seen me before. They knew me very well at that point. So the opportunity to keep connections, it's not possible for everybody, and obviously everybody has different family considerations, financial considerations. To whatever degree you can spend whatever time possible in Israel, that's going to be valuable. The question of how much do you need to make it in Israel is, like the British say, how long is a piece of string? It depends. It depends on your family situation. It depends upon people that worked here beforehand and have savings and can eat into those savings to help them get adjusted while they, the first year or two, before they find the thing that really will become their career, that obviously gives you a certain amount of flexibility. But when someone will make you a job offer and you'll say, how could I possibly, particularly if you've lived here, if you've never worked, obviously you've lived here, but if you've never lived here as a professional, working, you know, independent of your parents, and you've had to support a family and et cetera, and you know what it costs to do that here, and then someone will offer you a job in Israel, you'll say, how could anybody possibly live on that? You have to understand that whatever it is that they're offering you may not be all that much less than what your neighbor, the computer programmer, or even your neighbor, the lawyer, is making. The salary differentials between chinuch and rabbonus and avodas hakodesh are obviously, it's going to be lower than somebody working in law, but the differential is not as big as it is here. It doesn't make it easier to pay your bills at the end of the month. It just takes some of the sting off of it. But it is also an indication. It's also an indication of the fact that people echshu somehow do make it. The question of this, what I mentioned earlier, the value of teaching in the Shana Ba'aretz system versus teaching in the Israeli system, for example, there are many advantages and disadvantages, and again, there are big variables between or among the different Shana Ba'aretz yeshivot. It may come as a surprise. A few years ago, I gave a talk similar to this here, and somebody was very incredulous about the statement I'm about to make. It may come as a surprise to you to know that not all yeshivot are fair and honest in how they pay teachers. There are yeshivot that will pay teachers under the table, which I'm not getting into the legal or moral or halachic components of dodging taxes. That should be obvious. But from a simply practical perspective, it's foolish in the long run. Because in Israel, if you get a tlush maskoret, if you get a payslip, if you're a registered worker with the organization, you have certain rights and benefits. And if you get, even if you're going to be ending up, of course, taking home more money, and I know of a certain yeshiva where a teacher was told, you're going to make X thousand shekel a month. So he said, well, how much am I going to take home? That's another important
term. Netto and brutto. Net is net, and brutto is gross. When somebody offers you a job in America, they tell you you're going to make however many thousand dollars a month. And you don't ask, how much of that am I going to take home? Right? When you ask somebody, in America it's a little less polite to say, how much money do you make a year? Well, if they're going to tell you, they're going to tell you their gross salary. They're not going to like do the math for you to figure out how much came out for Social Security, etc. In Israel, the gap between your gross and your net is usually quite large, although for Olim, that's not the case. The first 3 years after Aliyah, you'll pay very, very little taxes. So if some place is offering you 12,000 shekel a month on the books, you're going to take home most of that, because as an Aliyah incentive, you're in a very, very low tax bracket. But your contract is in gross. It's 12,000 shekel. The employer is paying 12,000 shekel a month. In Israel, the employer does the withholding and pays the IRS, the Israeli Mas Hakhnasa, for you. And you get your... So the first year after you make Aliyah, you're making 12,000 shekel a month gross. You're going to take home a check that says 11,560 shekel, something like that. And the small amount is your very little bit that you pay to Bituach Lumi, which is Social Security, and a little bit to Mas Hakhnasa. But after a certain amount of time passes, after 18 months, you take a cut, and then after 18 months, you then go into the regular system, your salary is going to plummet. Now, an employer, we have somebody that works for us that was just like this. He just came up to this second round of
of plummet, and the regular tax bracket cut in, he's taken home a lot less. So legally, I don't have to do it. Nothing's changed. I'm still paying him the same thing, even though the proportion of what he's taking home is a lot less. Morally, I now have to say, the guy can't live on that, so I'm going to have to give him a raise. But not every employer is either going to be willing or able to do that. So you have to understand that you have to try to figure out when you get that first job offer, you know, how much you're really going to be taking home and how much would you be taking home if you were a real full tax-paying Israeli. Now, hopefully, after 2-3 years, you're going to move up in the world, you're going to have a better job, you're going to make more, but you have to understand that that's one of the, there's that hidden factor that, you know, for an ole. When the yeshiva told this guy, you're going to make 12,000 shekel a month, so he says, is that netto or brutto? So they said, well, we'll either give you 12,000 shekel in cash in an envelope, or we'll pay it on the books, and you'll take home 9,000 shekel. So he said, how could this be? So he asked the Shaila. He asked Rabbi Schechter. He was a Talmud of Rav Schechter. Rav Schechter said, of course you can't. You have to pay taxes. So he went back to them and said, look, I asked the Shaila, I have to pay taxes. So they said, that's on your cheshbon. So I tell this story not for its shock value, but you have to understand what you go into. Now, when you're making, and again, I'm not here to paskin your shailas, neither in taxes nor in halacha. Just from a practical matter, from a practical perspective, it's foolish in the long run. Because if you're not an employee, you're not going to have a pension. When you're 29 years old, you may not be thinking so much about the pension. But I was once 29 and now I'm 43 and it sneaks up on me. And you also don't get pitsuim. In Israel, there's a very good system of severance. If you work someplace for 10 years and then you get fired, which happens, the employer has to give you 10 months of your final salary. Over those 10 years, you got raises. You started off, you were making 5,000 shekel a month. 5 years later, you were making 10,000 shekel a month. 5 years after that, you're making 15,000 shekel a month. They have to give you 150,000 shekel, and you take all of that. Right? Now, the employer should be putting away into a fund while you're employed. It's called a Keren Pitsuim. If you're getting money under the table, you're not entitled to that. And I've heard of places, I know of people who got fired after working X number of years, they're not entitled to pitsuim because they were never an employee. Right? Go sue them. So what are you going to do? You're going to go sue and say, yeah, all these years I was taking money under the table, I wasn't paying taxes on it, and now they owe me? Right? So if the place wants to be generous, they'll give you some kind of severance. But it's in the long run, it's always foolish to do this. And again, I'm not speaking legally or halachically. This is not in all institutions, of course. It's not even in most institutions, but it happens, and you'd be surprised to find out. On our website, on atid.org, I think it's still on the homepage. If not, just search in there. There was this series of two articles called The Economics of Edutainment. Edutainment, education and entertainment. Two essays by teachers. And there's a recording. It's also available on YU Torah. If you search on YU Torah for edutainment, you'll find it. There was a conference that we had about these two topics. One was how the economics of the schools and the competition and all this other stuff, how that affects the learning experience of the kids, because the kids all have to be happy. This is talking about in Shana Baris places. The kids all have to be happy in order to come back, and that their siblings should come back, and etc. And the other was more on the economic side, on the dine momonos side of how teachers are treated or mistreated, and how that has an effect on the outcomes of the chinuch. So if these topics that I'm describing, if you want more, so look at those two things and listen to this discussion that we had online. There's some other things that I would mention about how the school system, or how the Israeli school system works. The main thing to know is that it's really quite different from the elementary or the high school education that you got that you got here, and if you were a teacher here or will be a teacher here, it's much different there. Among the main differences is that in Israel, basically, you're in the school when you're teaching, and you don't, except for the yeshivot tichoniot, where you're a ram, where the yeshiva, you understand the difference between a tichon and a yeshiva tichonit? There's a, in Israel, within the marechet chinuch mamlachti dati, within the religious education stream, which is part of the Yisrael chinuch, of course, there's no separation of church and state, there are yeshivot tichoniot, and there are tichonim datiim, religious high schools, which look a little bit, you know, they follow, there's of course Gemara, and there's Chumash, all of the Dati schools are separate sects. They're no co-ed schools. Even the most liberal of schools in Israel, everything is separate sects in the Dati world. And a yeshiva tichonit is a little bit more like, besides that it'll be longer, these are, not all of them have, but many of them have pnimiot, have dormitories. Although there's some yeshivot tichoniot that don't have dormitories, it's a more intensive learning experience, and usually those are schools that have all Gemara, you know, up front in the morning, and a teacher is a ram, and he's there. He has a much more full existence in the life of the institution. A yeshiva, a tichon dati, runs more like a high school. There are periods and bells and etc. A yeshiva tichonit looks more like a yeshiva with limudei chol in the afternoon, but it gives the opportunity for a ram to have sometimes a larger presence in the school. But even in the yeshivot tichoniot or in the girls' high schools, there's often a position called the rav beit hasefer. It's a pretty plum position. I actually know a couple of Anglo-Saxons that have that job. It usually means that you do some teaching. You're not the principal. You're not the Rosh Yeshiva. You are very much under the thumb of whoever the principal is. But it's a role where you can have not exactly what we might call the mashkiach in a yeshiva high school, but you're in charge of religious life in the school and the avirah, the atmosphere, all the special programming and things like that. So there are opportunities within the schools, even beyond teaching, for other types of things. There are other things that I could describe. I've gone through the major points. I'm happy to talk to anyone afterwards. We have a few minutes left. If anybody has any questions.
Besides the natural, I guess, divide in terms of language.
I apologize. I did forget one very important thing, which I alluded to earlier. I spoke mostly about chinuch. I encouraged you to think about setting up your own institution, which doesn't have to necessarily be a school. I do want to mention that among the very positive phenomena happening in Israel now, it's starting to change, we're a long way away from it being what it should be, is the rise of the pulpit rabbinate. It's not unusual for shuls in Israel not to have rabbis. In the entire state of Israel, there's not a single shul that has a full-time rabbi, shocking as it is. But we're beginning to see more and more shuls have rabbis. I wrote about this in an essay that was in the Orthodox Forum volume that came out last year. It's also on YU Torah. If you search for my name, you'll find it. It was an essay called something like "What a Difference Place Makes" is the title of the essay, or something like that. It's about the differences. It's about some of the differences between religious life here and religious life there. And among the things I describe there is the rise of the rabbinate in Israel. It won't be a full-time job, people that are interested in rabbonis, but it's an opportunity. And there are quite a few Anglo-Saxons succeeding in those positions. I mean, I happen to live in Efrat, and there's a disproportionate... the shuls that do have rabbis have a disproportionate amount of Anglo-Saxons. So
besides the obvious language divide,
Sure, absolutely, and you should work on that, which is why you're not going to become the Rosh Yeshiva of a Yeshiva Tichonit your first year, nor are you going to become a Shul Rabbi your first year. And a culture, you know, Hebrew is part of acculturating yourself to Israeli society. But you should be reading an Israeli newspaper every day, and I don't mean the Jerusalem Post. And you should be familiar with what's going on, particularly if you're interested in teaching in an Israeli school. You should, I mean, now in the age of the internet, when I first made Aliyah, it wasn't possible. There was no internet. But now you can watch Israeli television. Not that I recommend all of Israeli television, but you can do a lot of that kind of acculturation work before you even get there. And absolutely, you definitely need to do that. And even if you're going to be teaching, even if you're going to be the Yechideh Skula teaching in Netiv Aryeh and not needing Ivrit, who wants to be like my great-grandmother was, this greener that gets off the boat and is never acculturated to the society that they're living and the society that their children are going to grow up in? So, certainly. It's recognized as a smicha, like
it's the same perspective.
Yeah, there are different types of smicha in Israel, depending upon what you want to do. This is not something that any of you are going to be likely to do, at least initially, like become a Rav HaShchuna. To be a Rav HaShchuna, you need to have passed other bechinot, you need to have two smichas, things like that, which is why a lot of people get Rav Zalman Nechemya smicha. But it's in terms of pay scale for Mishra Chinuch, it's recognized as a smicha.
Sure.
Yeah. But for certain things, you need to have two smichas, which was popular once upon a time. People would get, you know, there were guys would collect up smichas. Like in Europe, it was popular. People would collect up smichas. But,
how prevalent at this point, aside from the Balei Tshuva Yeshiva, is outreach in Israel?
Outreach in Israel, I just talk about it a little bit in this paper that I mentioned. There are a lot of opportunities for outreach, particularly if you're willing to be a yozem and create your own things. It's a little more complicated because of you have to factor in the dati chiloni relations and tensions and conflicts. And there's this growing phenomena in Israel that you don't have here in the same way of Jewish outreach, not religious outreach, but Jewish outreach amongst the secular to the secular. So you have these, like this place in Tel Aviv, Alma, which is a Jewish studies program by Chilonim for Chilonim, and you have similar things in Yerushalayim also. The idea that it's one thing not to be religious, but you know, why would you want to be an Amaretz? And that's a type of competition for more conventional, what we think of maybe as Kiruv. And it has to be factored in through all of those other larger political issues, but there are many Kiruv opportunities in Israel.
And military, anything?
I mean, in other words, depending upon what age you'll be when you come, you'll either go to the army or you won't go to the army.
Not as in being drafted in, but as in going to the Al-Qaeda Kurdish in
the military. Oh, so look, it's probably a little harder to function as a Rav Tzva'i if you are coming at a later point in life. I don't even know if it might be technically possible, but it might not just be practically possible. I don't think that that's, you know, generally considered something, but I'm not saying that there's not an opportunity there that I'm unaware of. Okay, so Bahatzlacha, you have my email, whether you're coming next year or in 10 years from now, or you make the important sacrifice, and let me be clear on this, to fight the good fight and save the Jewish people here, which is not something to be overlooked. If I can be of help to you in any way, please feel free to be in touch.